outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Gym.
So, Kyle, just how long would you wait in line to get a cinnamon roll?
Maybe 30 minutes.
Maybe 30?
30 minutes, yep.
I waited two.
2 hours. What?
Yeah, Sarah and I were out wait for our anniversary, and there was this place nearby that was advertising great cinnamon rolls, and we thought, that's our thing. When we travel around the RV, we're not in the RV this time, but we're still finding cinnamon rolls. So we went by there in the afternoon or the late morning, and they were already sold out. And they said, we did make so many. When they're gone, they're gone. And so we thought, okay, the next day. So Sarah went back the next morning at 7 a.m. to see if she gets some cinnamon rolls. I was already out golfing at that hour of the morning. When she came to pick me up from golfing, she said, I didn't get any cinnamon rolls. I said, why not? She said, it was a 2 hour wait.
A 2 hour wait for a cinnamon roll.
At 7 in the morning.
Okay.
So she said, I said, well, why didn't you wait? And she goes, because I didn't want to. And nice. If you only knew the progress that represents for Sarah. The old Sarah waits 4 hours because she does not want to disappoint her man. That's Sarah, the old Sarah. This new Sarah, I didn't want to.
That's awesome. That's so amazing.
Yeah, it was amazing. I was both disappointed that she didn't wait, and I was so excited that she didn't wait. It was a crazy crash of emotions at that moment.
Okay, so did you get a cinnamon roll?
So the next day, I'm thinking, this, and it's our last day that we're leaving the next day. So I'm thinking, I'm going to go down there and get the cinnamon roll. And so I get up at 6 in the morning. The place doesn't open till 7. I go down there at 6. And it was already a line. It doesn't seem to be a horribly long line, but there's a bit of a line. So I thought, you know what? I'm here. I'm in line.
Yep.
And then, boy, over the next waiting time, which turned out to be, it was an hour before the place opened. And then by the time my section of the line got to the front, it was another hour. So I waited 2 hours for a cinnamon roll.
Okay. Was it like God's gift to humanity? Because there has to be something divine, or it's all hype. I can't fathom waiting that long.
Well, my fear was, because I was asking people around me, have you had these before?
Yeah.
No one around me said they'd done this before. So I'm thinking, okay, it could be all hype. You know, no locals are here, obviously. Yeah. Who'd wait 2 hours for a cinnamon roll every week if you needed one? But I had great conversations. The gal right in front of me is a Latter-day Saints mom whose daughter's getting ready to go on mission, and we got to spend a long time talking. She's from Washington. Ooh. We spent 2 hours, and then partway through the conversation, the lady behind me, which I'm going, where's all the men? Are they just back sleeping in? Why am I here? This would have been Sarah the day before, but I'm going, what are we doing here? Lady from West Virginia. So I had a great conversation for 2 hours. I actually enjoyed the waiting in line, but.
Oh, nice. Okay.
If you're going to ask me, would I do it again for that cinnamon roll? I would say this is probably the fifth best cinnamon roll in the country, which is not bad. That's pretty good, but I wouldn't wait 2 hours for this one again, but it was good. There's no doubt it was a great cinnamon roll, but I guess something blew up on TikTok or something about this place, which is why so many people were there. And what's funny, it's a little hole in the wall. It's a cinnamon roll pizza place. So they do cinnamon rolls in the morning and they do pizza at night.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Craziness.
But anyway.
It's those hole in the wall places that are, I mean, absolutely incredible. My sister and I, we were in Scotland and we were in this little tiny town in the northwestern Hebrides of Scotland. We were just enjoying our time and we see this line on the dock. And it is a very, very long line. We thought it was like maybe a tour boat or maybe a cruise ship had come in. We had no idea what was going on. So we kept going and we kept going on our tour. And we were talking to some locals in the next town that we went to. And we're like, we were staying at this one town before. And like, oh, did you get the fish and chips? And I was like, what are you talking about? And like, the best fish and chips in Scotland are in that town. And it is a phone booth. It is this tiny little shack on the edge of the pier. And it has supposedly, we missed it, but supposedly the best fish and chips in Scotland.
Best cupcake I've had in a space like that. Best cinnamon rolls I've had in places like that. Yeah, they are. I guess a line is a good indication. When you see a line, get in it and then find out what's going on up front and all that good stuff.
I mean, I don't mind cinnamon rolls. I enjoy a good cinnamon roll, but I don't think there's any way I could wait 2 hours for a cinnamon roll. That takes dedication.
I would not have done it had I known. I was figuring by the time it opened, we're probably going to be 10, 15 minutes down the line, but they actually time it. So they're pulling out a tray of these rolls and icing them while people are buying them. So, I mean, you get it hot out of the oven. So they kind of pace the line not to get ahead of the oven because they can't.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, that's taken up a lot of time for very little. I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Kyle Rice.
And welcome to this edition, episode, whatever, of The God Journey. Hey, listen, I think we're actually going to pull off our gathering in Kansas City, July 9 through 12. We're putting out a call for all people, God Journey-ish, live stream-ish, who would like to come and spend. Toby and his wife will be there, and we're going to hang out. We've got a church facility available to us that we can hang out in, some hotels nearby that people can get rooms at. And even if you're not local to the area, if you'd want to come in, this is a great time just to focus on just love, the other things that Toby and I are exploring together and learning together, and it won't be lectures. It'll be conversation because that's the way we do stuff. So hopefully there'll be lots of time other than just the times we'll all be together for people to connect and build relationships just like we've done in past trips to Israel and other places. Mm. So great time for a God Journey live stream folks to connect and meet others and form relationships and build friendships. So we're putting out a call. If you're interested, email me. We're trying to get enough stuff up online where you can sign up online, but I'm sure that's going to take a while because I've never done an Evite before, but who knows?
Yeah, okay.
Pull that off.
Now, are you going to be Zooming this or broadcasting this or recording it at all, or is it going to be just for the people who are there?
I think because it's going to be a conversation. So it's really, I know people love us to record stuff like that who can't be there. We may record some bits of it. Not sure at all. We're not planning that at the moment. This is really about relational connection as well as exploration. And we might find other ways to get that information to people, but it's primarily not about information. It's about relationships. I'd love to introduce Toby to a lot of my friends and people get to know him personally and his wife.
Yeah.
Hopefully that's what it is. So we want to invite you. If you want to consider going, email me and let me know at this point. Awesome. Hopefully we'll get some stuff up, but we'd love to have you join us. Not the best time to be in Kansas City, and it's not not like Hawaii or anything, right in the heartland of the country in the middle of summer. But it's about the people and the air conditioning. That's what it's about.
There we go. As long as there's air conditioning, that's a good space then.
It is a good space. So what's the best thing you heard this week, Kyle?
Well, the best thing I heard this week, it could move us into some interesting stuff.
I'm all about interesting stuff. So,
this one, it was a reel that I saw come across my Instagram feed, and it's by the podcast is called The Influence of Sales. So that's the name of the podcast. And they were pulling an excerpt out of it, and it was talking about the three things that people in general spend money on. The third thing that this individual identified was very interesting to me. He said that people will pay an obscene amount of money to feel something they can't get anywhere else. The more emotional the experience, the higher the price they're willing to pay.
Ooh, it's the emotional experience.
The higher the emotional experience, the more they're willing to pay.
So let's exploit that, huh?
That literally had my mind running because I was thinking about all the different ways that within our culture that is severely exploited of how do we create this emotional hype? How do we create this emotional experience? And the more that we can quote unquote prove that we come up with emotional results or impactful results, the more money we can charge for these things. And everything I was thinking about, everything from like Bethel and them charging for you to be able to see their worship services.
Wow, you went right to attacking Bethel. Wow, way to go.
I mean, that's one of the examples because they're known.
They do charge a lot of money.
They charge a lot of money. And I remember back in 2015, 2016, trying to go on and watch some of their stuff and their content. And it was like, well, do you want to sign up for this annual membership or do you want to do a one-time access fee or how do you want to? And I was like, seriously? Like, are we doing a channel here? Like, what's going on? And
When are we going to learn, Kyle? When are we going to learn to have subscriptions to the God Journey? And to
I had somebody mention that to me just this last week of like, why don't you guys advertise? Why don't you charge for that? I was like,
what? We've given this away for 22 years. Cause that's, I don't see how you monetize the gospel. I just don't know how you do it.
And yet the more flashy and the bigger you can go with it. I mean, it's one of the greatest stories of all human history, if not the greatest. And if we can tie some major emotional content to it and, you know, spray some gold dust into the air and have strong visceral reactions.
Maybe that's why there's a line outside a cinnamon roll place, huh?
Correct. There might be some hype to that.
$12 per cinnamon roll.
$12 per cinnamon roll.
But it was so big. I'm telling you, it was probably 10 inches in diameter.
Okay.
Yeah, Sarah and I shared it. I was going to get two, and then I saw them. I'm going, no. One will ruin my diet for the week. But,
so get your 60,000 calories in one setting?
One setting. Last day of vacation. Yeah, get it done. Get on your way home. So anyway.
But no,
wow, that's disturbing.
It really made me think about all the different avenues that we do that. And how we use these spaces. I think this is a space I'd love to wrestle with and kind of explore with you. One of the things that got highlighted to me as I was reflecting on this was thinking about therapy and counseling retreats, counseling experiences, really good therapists, and them charging exorbitant amounts of money because they have results. They come through with results. And the more they receive an emotional impact or an emotional healing experience, then the more people they refer and the more money that you can charge. And man, or you keep it limited, right? So you reduce the amount of people and you only see an X amount of people during the time, but you triple or quadruple the price that you're charging in order to be seen.
Or you have retreats where certain people have VIP access and get to the speakers, and other people just have to sit in the auditorium and listen from a distance. All this stuff has been done.
And is still being done.
The problem with therapy is, it's at least noticing it from Sarah's side, it's not always a pleasant experience.
No, it is not.
Good therapy is not a pleasant experience.
That is very true.
It's a lot of work. If you could shortcut it, if you could sell an elixir of some kind that would make therapy unnecessary, might be able to sell that puppy.
Well, and I think that's what, especially when you look at the self-help world and all of the different things, the coaching or self-help or books that are out there for the next big health kick or whatever it might be, man, this really pulled on my heartstrings a little bit, because it's like, Lord. And literally this guy, and this is where my stomach started to turn. He was talking about, if you can identify which of these you're selling and sell it the best, market it the best, if you can tap into these three core things, specifically this third one of experiences and selling an emotional experience, then there's no end to what you can charge in the amount of wealth and money that you can accrue through selling it. I don't know what to do with that. It made my stomach turn. And yet I know the arguments are going to be, well, but I've got to make a living. I've got to be able to pay for this is my full-time gig. So how am I supposed to be able to pay for it? I've got to be able to pay my mortgage. And yet it's like, I don't know, Wayne.
And so much of our full-time gigs these days are not like producing stuff people actually need.
Correct.
It's about this. It's about finding an OnlyFans fan base or it's a Facebook thing or an influencer. They're not selling anything other than personality and recommendation, and they're not producing anything. They're not coming and fixing the Wi-Fi that doesn't work in your house or doing something to actually help you get along in life better.
Yeah.
They're just selling you an experience that, as most of you know, you go to one of those great experiences, then you got to chase it again.
Yeah.
Because nothing fulfills after that. I've known people who've gone to like four of the T-Swift concerts.
Oh, because
it was such an emotional high for them that now they're traveling, not just paying the exorbitant prices for the tickets, but they're flying to another town and doing all this stuff because they're chasing. And then eventually it's over. You can't go to another concert. You can't fill that space again.
I mean, it got me to thinking about value too, because I was thinking about, so I went to a 21 Pilots concert in Denver at one point, and
they work for United or American, or what do you mean 21 Pilots?
They're a very, very famous music group.
Are there 21 of them?
No, there's just two of them, just two guys. But they,
I am so out of touch. Can't tell you. And you're going to this concert. I'm going to a Beach Boys concert later this summer.
Ooh,
and
nice.
And they're all dead. So
yeah, that'll be interesting.
We'll see what comes of it.
There's just so many facets that this ties into. Because I go to this 21 Pilots concert, and we happen to know one of the artists that was playing ahead of them. And so we got in for, we were able to get in for free, and we didn't have to stand in line.
Look, there had been not even to pay there for your experience. Not even willing to pay for it, Kyle.
Yeah, it was. So it was this really cool deal. We got, I mean, anyway, but as I was walking by, there had been people camped out on the sandstone of this concert venue for over 24 hours to be able to get a seat.
Oh,
and I thought about that, and I was like, I would never do that. I would never sleep on a slab of rock to hold my place in line to watch an hour and a half concert. Just how we ascribe value to it. And it's because of that emotional experience. The more that we can activate that internal human emotion, raw human emotion, that deep-seated need, the more people are willing to sacrifice for it, the longer they're willing to wait in line for it, the longer they're willing to commit to it. What are your thoughts on that? Especially when we think about discipleship making or the body of Christ like that. I don't know. There is a lot that was connecting to this in my mind.
Well, sure there is, because there's a lot that my faith, my connection, my relationship with Jesus is the most important thing in my life.
Yeah.
And you can market the facsimile of that. I went to many things when I was younger that hyped up an experience that we attach to relationship, but it wasn't. And you knew at the moment you walked out. It was a great singing thing. It was great emotional oratory. It was whatever, but you get away from it. And you're going, okay, I'm not different inside. It just, it was an experience, a great experience, but not transformative. And so what I think of with that, Sarah and I started a book on our trip out of town for our wedding anniversary called Thirsting by Strahan Coleman. It was recommended to me by a good friend, said, hey, I think you would love this book. And it took me a while to get to it because I had too many other books I was working on at the time. The Thirsting is about the deep cry in the inner soul for connection with its creator.
Oof.
And just, I'm going to quote some of this because it, to me, it fits right into what you just said. This is my best thing I heard last week. It stimulated some great conversation between Sarah and I as we were driving and I was reading to her. Yeah. This is what it says. At the bottom of our being is a throbbing, an aching that pines for its other, with a capital O, day and night, in endless longing. That part of us knows that everything else unsatisfies, knows there's something non-external that wants to find its way in, knows that a soul longing can't be fulfilled by anything this world has to offer, despite the world's best efforts to convince us otherwise. And that's what you're talking about right there.
Yeah.
We get in this longing, which Strahan writes about, is he talks about it as a deep aquifer in all of us. It's that empty part that God wants to fill because we were created for him. Not the controlling aspects of a master, but the intimate affection of a lover. That's what God made us for. And that's what our hearts long for. And I think people are looking for those experiences you're talking about. That's exactly what they're looking for. That for the moment makes them feel full inside.
Yes.
That it's unsustainable says it didn't really fill the hole. It placated the hole. And talks about the aquifer deep with this aching longing to be one with God.
Yeah.
And that comes out in desires that are temporal and empty, may seem great for the moment, but then fade away. It's like drugs that make you feel really good for a while, and then they destroy you while they don't replicate the experience. And we've all had that, whether it's religious experience or some food you really love and whatever, that you've done something that provided a moment of fullness, but then it becomes unsustainable because what the need it's trying to fulfill is deeper than the temporal thing we're seeing on the outside. And one of the things he says in the book is most of us aren't even in touch with where the thirst is coming from.
Ooh, completely agree with that. I do too. Agree with that. Yeah, I mean, that's, and I meet so many young people that I'm talking to in the various areas of my life that they're identifying that ache, they're identifying that longing, that desire, but they can't actually identify the source. And the hard part is, and this is why I said potentially the best, greatest story of all time, I would say it is like the life, the wholehearted life that Jesus came and gave his life for and invited us into. It is the greatest invitation, blessing, gift humanity has ever experienced. But it gets so hijacked that when I talk with a lot of young people, the conversation is, well, yeah, I tried that. I went down that road for a period of time and it didn't fulfill me. Like I felt something for a period of time, or, you know, there was some hype here, or this was just something that was required. I was told that this is what was the ultimate experience of life and life in the full. But then I tried it and it didn't satisfy me. It was empty. It was, or in some of the more charismatic circles, they had a genuine experience with the Father heart at some point in that. And then they started chasing that high. I'm going to be going to all these different conferences, or I'm going to be trying all these different experiences, or I'm going to go to this inner healing and this intercessory prayer and this, like trying to get back to that space where they experience that connection, that thin space with the author of genuine life. And that, man, that's
because most of us get turned on to Jesus and then get set in religion. So
yes,
the performance, the repetitive rituals, all that's not what satisfies the wholeness of heart.
Yeah.
It's a genuine connection with the Father through the work of the Son. And Toby and I've talked about this. We're working on the book. Our whole approach to salvation isn't to help people make that connection. Because we kept it in a logical Roman road, sinner's prayer, baptism, join the church, now go on and be a good Christian. We connected it with everything external that humanity can control.
Yep.
Because the way to help somebody connect with the eternal is not so easily orchestrated into a simple set of steps. And yet we've always wanted to put it in a set of steps. So even the whole idea of salvation was, let's make it about heaven or hell. Here's the assurance. You've done this. So you don't feel anything. Nothing's alive inside. It doesn't matter. You're going to be fine in eternity. And instead of starting with, oh, salvation is your connection to Jesus Christ that leads you away from the narcissism of flesh and connects you with the wholeness of what your desire for him is all along. And I'll read the next part of this, which plays into your best thing you heard this week, which is really the worst thing I've heard this week, what you just shared. But anyway, he says, we don't live in neutral territory when it comes to the desires of our hearts. We are part of a masterful system that longs to manipulate and use our thirst to its own ends. That is the saddest thing right there. When we say God wants us, when we talk about God creating us out of desire, this is the kind of desire we're talking about. This is the kind of love. If God is a community of love that empties himself into the other, only to be filled perfectly to the very core of himself, and I'm made in that image, then the true depth of my need reveals itself to me as something profoundly divine. Finally, I can stop trying to engulf the world so ravenously. I can say to all my detoured desires, you're not what I want. I want love with a capital L. Isn't that good?
It's so good.
I am recommending this book. I rarely come on here and say, this is a book you want to read. But boy, this is a book. If that thirsting is in your heart and that desire. And what I skipped over here, that's when we say God wants us, and there's a whole chapter on the desire you have in you for God, God has that in greater proportion for you. that God didn't create us to save these stupid little minions who went off into sin and did stupid little things. His desire in making you was to connect with you at the deepest possible level. That's his desire, which is why you also have that desire.
Mm. Okay, so how do we separate this out or untangle this? Because I think this desire, it's been written in our hearts. It's a core innate need for the human experience because we were designed by our creator to need that fulfilled by him. He was the only person who could fulfill that. So it's at that depth of level in regards to our DNA. So then if it's at that depth of level, then we stair step up to the old brain. So fight, flight, freeze, or fawn, the survival response. Because I would say that in a lot of regards, now Freud would argue with me on this, but a lot of regards, healthy desire and longing, in order to put language around that and to connect it in a healthy way, has to be in the prefrontal cortex. So it has to be in that advanced front brain versus in that innate deep survival brain. So there's like this ongoing tension working of, okay, this is this deep innate human need that we have. And yet it's almost like our survival response hijacks our ability to be able to put language around and to sit in and to pursue longing. That once that fear is activated, is this making sense at all?
Yeah, like, no, it does. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like this, I don't know how to untangle it because I feel like this longing is so deeply seated in the human experience that every single person I've ever talked to is having a conversation around this longing. And to be able to process it and to engage it, I can't be in fear. I can't be in survival. I have to be present. I have to be relationally present. I have to be in a restful space, a rest, love, and play space in order to really be able to engage and connect with that longing in a healthy way. And so how do we untangle that? Like, I don't know.
I haven't finished the book yet, but maybe he gives us some cues in that.
Okay.
I think the story of my life has been when you let that desire play out. That's been the determining desire of my heart since I was a little boy. Mm. Connection with God that just, man, when it happened, and it happened rarely and far apart. Yeah. And part of it was I'd double my religious efforts to try and hold on to it, make it replicate it. Like you said, trying to seek the experience instead of hosting the connection that God has. And then you start actually diminishing your desire. It's hard to live with the desire that goes unfulfilled. And that's where a lot of people who have been in touch with that deep aquifer of affection for God and desire to connect with him, disappointed by the fact that it didn't happen the way it was being served up to them, and finally diminishing the desire to survive, going back to what you said, because you can't live with an unmet desire. And then we're taught in many, this is what Toby dealt with really well, I think, in Just Love, how desire gets to be a thing you discriminate against. Desires are bad. We call them lusts, and you can't have desire, not for financial things, not for anything. You got to abandon your desires. And this book, which Toby encourages too, and I do too, is to sit with your desire. Let the desire for God grow in your heart. Desire is a good thing when you're living inside what God's given you. Desire becomes a bad thing when you do like Adam and Eve, reach outside of God to meet the desire in my heart, the lie that something outside of God can fulfill what my heart is hungering for. Instead of, no, inside of God, and putting all my eggs in that basket. And that doesn't mean you can't go out and enjoy a concert or go out and do whatever.
Absolutely.
It means not finding your fullness there.
Yeah.
And if that's what you're seeking, then you will be easily manipulated by everything you just talked about on that podcast. And there are people out there with great ability who are scheming, which is what the motivational speakers were doing when you and I were growing up. You know, they're hosting these huge, expensive weekend walk on coals of fire, and people just, and then they keep seeking that. Once you've had something in that you value, or even a religious experience, you will keep seeking it.
Yeah.
And the seeking of it is not the same as the hosting of him in your heart. And unfortunately, and maybe this is what we need to talk about the God Journey for weeks to come, is how do people create the environment in their own heart to host the presence of God that is already there and you're just out of touch with? It helps me. Boy, I don't know that I've ever thought as extensively that God's desire for me is as great as my desire for God. And if he's God, it's got to be greater. So
yeah,
if I don't think he wants it, then I've got to work overtime to get his attention, to draw him in, to do something that'll make God notice me. And there I am, and I want you. And if we were free from all that, and we just knew God's desire for us is greater than our desire for him, the connection isn't difficult because God makes it so. It's difficult because of all the places we get lost in and our fear of being able to trust that God knows the best way to bring to us the fullness of life that we seek. And in our disappointment, we try to find some other way to medicate that, whether it's food or drugs or entertainment or whatever. And that's what I really love about this whole thing about desire. To really realize all my, to say, what do you say at the end of this? I can stop trying to engulf the world so ravenously. I can say to all my detoured desires, you're not what I want. You're the imposter. You're trying to draw me into something that isn't what God has for me.
Yeah, I think, so one of the thoughts that came up in my mind was, how often do we lean more into the priests of Baal and Asherah in the Mount Carmel experience, right? Where it's like, okay, we're going to press in, we're going to tear our shirts, we're going to harm our bodies, we're going to do all these crazy things.
Scream louder, do more. Yeah.
Yes, yes. Like maybe he's on vacation, like do more. Like maybe he's going to come back and talk to you. I mean, and yet, gosh, I went to a men's retreat that was connected to a very famous men's ministry here in the States that was based around a very popular book at one point.
Wow, and I know what you're talking about. Dick, you can figure it out. We have a free copy of Just Love for the first 10 people who figure out what I'm
talking. So I go to this retreat, and we're staying in this like summer camp type thing in the mountains in Colorado. And one of the people that was staying there, they had been to one of these events 4 times. And I was like, why? Like the content is the exact same. Like the message, like, why would you keep coming? And so I just got into a dialogue with this individual and I was just curious. And they talked about the first one that they went to was so powerful and so meaningful. And so they just keep coming back to these, and how we misassign desire. It's like this, I think so often it's easy to put the desire or put the focus of the desire on an experience or an outcome or an event, especially if it's a genuine expression of the heart of Father, where our lives are truly moved in a deeper space in his love, that it's so easy to misconceive that as the thing.
Right.
And instead of being like, no, you're talking about an ongoing living an active relationship with the creator of the universe. He's not there anymore. Like, yes, he may have met you at that one experience, but he's moved on. Like the conversation is different. Like don't get stuck back there. Why? But we so often, I know even for me, I remember I had this really, really powerful experience with God in the backcountry in Wyoming when I was guiding. And it was just this one of the most beautiful moments that I've ever had with the Lord. And so then for the next 3 years, I backpacked back into that same lake looking for the same intimate experience that I had with Father at that lake. And never once again did I have anything close to what I had that first year.
Yeah.
And I remember hiking out the last year that I went in and was like, Lord, what's going on here? And it's like, Kyle, we're in a different space. We're having a different conversation. Like, yes, it's fine for you to come back and to continue to enjoy the beauty of that place and to continue to enjoy my creation there. But you're looking for an experience where we had a relational moment there, but that's gone. Like, that's past. Like, there's more to be seen in the now versus trying to recreate or chase something that you had in the past.
Yeah, for sure. And that to me is one of the, if we realize where our thirst is coming from.
Yeah.
That it comes from this deep aquifer in each of us that is only satisfied by the other filling that place, our other, capital O, Jesus, and his Father and Son, that community that is the Spirit coming in and living with us. And that's something that we can't control. I think that drives us nuts because we want to control it. We want to, particularly if you've done one of those kinds of events and you've had people really deeply touched and you're going to do the same event either in every town, every weekend of your life, or you're going to do them 2-3 times a year in a place. To try to replicate that and take responsibility as the group that people are now paying thousands of dollars to come and be at this thing, you've got to put on quite a show to make that worth it, right, to people? Quite an illusion if it's not real. And God's not going to be contained in, yes, I'm going to show up every time you do your thing because you're building a dependence on you. And yes, I would love to show up and be part of that with you. Getting people to realize what Jesus said, your experience on the backcountry, be part of this is too. Don't go looking for me here or there, for the kingdom of God is within you. What meets that well is there. Now, how does God want that to be expressed on this day? Mm. And I think if we weren't so stressed about trying to find it somewhere, even in our quiet time, finding it somewhere, just what is God putting on my heart today? Mm. What allows me to slide into his reality today? And just again, if sin is grabbing for ourselves what God has not given, then freedom is not grabbing anything that God isn't giving. So my perspective is, what are you giving me today? And Toby and I had this conversation on Monday. That encompasses everybody. It's not, we spend a lot of our time trying to aspire to someone else's relationship. I want a vision like Wayne. I want dreams like Lewis. I want. And we're aspiring to things so that we're missing what God is inviting us into on this day. And if we could learn that and then wake up the next day, what is the gift today? What is his insight today? We're going to have those moments, but we're not going to have them every day. We don't control those. And if the fullness is in the experience, we're still going to miss it.
Yeah.
Because I, when we find our fullness in God's connection with us and who he is and how he walks us through life, then you know what? At times we're not having, quote unquote, the experience. What we do have is a deep inner contentment in our hearts. Like, oh my gosh, I love the life God has laid out before me. I love what's unfolding. Doesn't mean my life's perfect. Doesn't mean everything's nailed down the way I like it. But the contentment of, I'm not alone in these things, and he's with me, and I wish we had done more. I look back on our pastoral days of so wanting to conform people to standards of behaviors or rituals or activities that built up our organization that we really forgot to help people have that connection.
Yeah.
How does God make himself known to you? Yeah. And how do you help incubate the environment in which you can recognize presence? Because it's really that. It's not, I need to create presence. It's, how do I incubate the reality that helps me recognize? Because he is present. It starts with desire. I think it does. I let the desire run rampant. The desire for fullness inside of God. Let it run.
I love what you just said. The challenge is that what you just said is probably one of the most dangerous statements to religion you could possibly state.
Oh, I wouldn't do that. Please, I recant that.
Because when you open yourself up to allowing yourself to feel and recognize and be in the desire, it can be perceived as a very dangerous door to open. I think so often we as humanity, we spend a lot of our time just trying to cope with not actually cracking that door to genuine desire. It's still leaching into our lives. Right. I don't think it can not. Right. But we just try to find ways to temporarily cope with it or to kill it or satiate it, whatever we need to do. But man, to really crack that door and say, I'm willing to see where my desire for Christ, my desire for the life that he offers, my desire to be in the presence of the only person who can fill that space in my heart. It's a pretty spicy road. I mean, yeah. I remember the early days of cracking that door and really being present with desire. And it is a very intriguing road to open, because then all of a sudden it's like, okay, where am I taking my desire? What does that look like in the past? Where am I currently trying to take that desire or trying to have those needs fulfilled? What does it look like to hold space? So for example, even in whether that be marriage or parenting or business, and it's like, man, I had these dreams, I had these desires inside that I felt like God was authoring, and yet it's not working the way that I thought. I'm not experiencing it the way that I felt like I was supposed to. It's not the quote unquote Hollywood dream that was sold to me or spiritual religious dream that was sold to me. Man, that, talk about poking holes in your perception. You crack that door to desire and let Father really start to move you into that space and open your heart to that. It is going to poke some holes / start ripping stuff apart.
It will. And part of it, I think, is you've got to see where you're medicating that desire to diminish it.
Yes.
And pull away from those things where you're kind of you're taking a fake desire, the illusionary desire that takes away from the genuine one. Right before I read this book, Thirsting, Sarah and I started, I finished a novel that a friend of mine wrote out of Australia. It's called Going to Sophie. And it's a romantic thriller, which is kind of an interesting juxtaposition of themes. But a friend of mine wrote it, so I read through it. And one of the things I thought just that really caught me in this, there's in the romantic part of this novel, they talk about my love for you was calling to your love for me. And that's how they found themselves. And I love that phrase. Your love for me was drawing me.
Yeah.
And if we look at that in a reciprocating way, my desire for God, my love for him is drawing him. Yeah. And his love for me is drawing me. And if those two things can just grow, and I don't diminish my side of it, get distracted, detoured in the words of the author of this book, that's where we've got to find, and that's probably different for all of us, but where does my desire for him, let it run riot. Because it will connect. His desire for you is greater than your desire for him.
Yeah.
And so if you explore that reality, that's where the connection gets made and where the satisfying sense of God with me, God in me, God present, me being a habitation for him, he being a habitation for me, can really move off. If we could embrace the desire God gave us and the desire God has for us, and watch how he melts those realities together in our heart. That meets the deepest cry within us.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.